So, and so here's the outline of the presentation. I will start by the unavoidable introduction on connecting EVMs to UV ultraviolet models of CP violation. I'll zoom in on matrix elements, which were discussed earlier on. And then in the second longer part, I will focus on electric dipole moments and as probes of new sources of CP violation in the LHC era. So I'm going to take the point of view, which I think it's not too unfair, that the two main results from the LHC so far are one, that there is a Higgs boson at 125 GeV. Two, everything else, if there's anything, is considerably heavier, all right? So these are, and these two, I think, motivate particularly the study of what's the impact of EDMs on the CP violating couplings of the Higgs, this quote-unquote new particles that we have around. We want to characterize it as much as possible, and EDMs can help. And second, the impact of EDMs on, well, in general, high-scale models. And I will discuss, because I happen to work a little bit on this, on impact on high-scale supersymmetry. But this is supposed to be representative of a general class of models. So, that framework. We love EDMs. We've heard many reasons from many speakers. Here's my list, because they're essentially free of standard model background. They're probes of new physics free of standard model background, with the little caveat that, yes, an observation could either signify new physics or a tiny theta term, and multiple experiments can disentangle the two, so it's still very interesting. Motivation number two, they probe very high scales in the range of 10 to 100 TeV, depending on what CP phase here is and the loop factors. And third, they probe a key ingredient for biogenesis because CP violation in standard model is not sufficient. And this is particularly important if one looks at low scale, so-called electroweak scale biogenesis mechanisms. We hate EDMs for the following reasons, as represented in this cartoon. Because connecting EDMs that are measured down here, nuclear, atomic, or hadronic scale, to new physics, possibly at very high scale, is a challenging multi-scale problem. You need RG evolution of these new couplings that maybe play a role in biogenesis. And then you have to deal with the hadronic and nuclear and atomic physics matrix elements. So, in a way, to go from an experimental measurement to what you think might be the new sources of CP violation, you have to go through a couple of barriers, depending on the system you have. If you're doing a Mercury 199, it's probably the hardest. If you start with a neutron, it's a bit easier, but you have only one barrier, going from neutron to quark and gluons. But anyway, so that's the point. And I will show matrix elements uncertainties strongly dilute the constraining and the model discriminating power of these impressive experimental searches. So I feel for a theorist, it's very humbling to sit there and listen to the experimental progress. And we ought to do something about these matrix elements. So let me, before going to the phenomenology, let me zoom in to this kind of barrier, the hadronic barrier, say a few things about some status and prospects for hadronic matrix elements, which by definition are just going from quark gluon to nucleon and most pions. Regardless what the new physics, as long as it's ultraviolet, it's heavy, once you evolve down, down to a scale of a couple of GeV, the sources of CP violation, there aren't that many. It's a handful, right? So there's, you can classify them as dimension six operators at the electroweak scale. So you have the electric and chromoelectric dipoles of the fermions. This is spin dotted into electric field or spin dotted into the chromoelectric field. There's our T-odd and P-odd. There's the gluon chromo-EDM, this is called Weinberg operator. And there's a bunch of four quark and semi-leptonic operators. If this is too abstract for you, they come. This coefficient here, they're dimensionful, and they are generated by integrating out heavy particles in, for example, in supersymmetry or in two Higgs doublet models, and then evolving them down to the scale. So through RGE mixing, they most of them they mix, as I'll show you later. So now the barrier is that we don't make experiments with quarks and gluons. We do them with, let's say, the neutron, the proton, and atoms and molecules. So you have to go to this set of leading effective coupling using the degrees of freedom of neutron, proton, pions, and electrons. And again, so you need the dipole moments of the nucleon and electron, T-odd pion-nucleon coupling, and then 3-pion and short-range 4-nucleon and 2-nucleon-electron couplings. So these are calculable to appropriate sets of matrix elements. If you are a phenomenologist, so you start from the, perhaps the easiest would be the neutron EDM, and you look up the what has been, is I think, the standard reference, kind of a Bible for these kind of things. You go to the Pospelov and Ritz review, and you look, what's the neutron EDM in terms of these short distance couplings? And here the errors matter, okay? So these are estimated through QCD some rules. And as you see, there's a range from about 50%, which again, this 50% is an estimate of this error. It's not really a validated error, to about 200% for these couplings. Here is the place where lattice QCD can play a major role, because you can do estimates, but also with a controlled approximation, and the error bars have hopefully a real meaning. And so, in principle, one can start. So I'll show you, there's been recent progress on improving these numbers, the neutron EDM from the quark EDMs. There's ongoing effort in improving these numbers. And then, well, this has been pushed to the future, but I want to emphasize there's a reason for this hierarchy. You do this first, because you can do it regardless of the others. The chromo EDM, as you start worrying about the chromo EDM, you also have to worry about this one, because they mix with the order alpha strong. And then the Weinberg doesn't make any sense to start right now, because this guy mixes with the chromo EDM, and so on. So there's a natural hierarchy, a reason for ordering these in this way. So let me describe the first step, kind of the low-hanging fruit. So if you start with an interaction which has a electric dipole of the quark, essentially the problem factorizes, right? So you can think of it as this gamma phi, this you can write as sigma mu nu f mu nu tilde. So all you need to know is somehow the spin structure of the nucleon encoded in the so-called tensor charge. You need to know q bar sigma mu q in the nucleon. And as part of the collaboration that Wei Wen described this morning, using 9 ensemble of staggered fermion, and using Clover fermion for valence quark, we were able to kind of extract these tensor charges through a simultaneous fit to the continuum limit, the physical point in the pion mass, and the infinite volume. So in other words, the merit of this number is not that we have a number, but that one has tried to address all the systematics, excited states, continuum, quark masses, and so on, and you arrive at to something or about 10% error. What's the impact for well, this is a compilation of what was known before. QCD, you can get these tensor charges from the QCD sum rule, from transversity, as we heard. For some reason, only the QCD sum rule result was used in the phenomenology. And so you see, you have smaller errors, but also smaller central values. So once you add up, in most models, this means that the neutron EDM for fixed CP violation turns out to be smaller, factor 2 to 3 smaller. And we've heard from experimentalists that even a factor of 3 can take 5 to 10 years to obtain. So it's important to know this matrix element to set the goals for fixed sources of CP violation, how hard you have to work experimentally to reach that. And so theory comes in that. Very briefly, what about the next step? The neutron EDM from the chromo EDM. This is a much harder beast to handle. First of all, we started worrying about the structure of ultraviolet divergences, and these diagrams, one loop perturbative diagrams, are kind of cartoon to show you that the chromo EDM mixes, of course, with itself. It's a divergence onto itself. It mixes with the electric dipole moment. It mixes with the pseudoscalar density, which you can't neglect on the line. Even with good chiral symmetry, it will mix with it. It will mix with mass times GG dual, the theta term. All right, so we, in this paper with which basically the lead author was Emanuele Merghetti, we worried and proposed a roadmap on how to make this all the relevant subtractions on the lattice. But then, of course, this is useless until you also start getting a signal on the lattice. And here, again, the problem does not factorize. As Sergei showed yesterday, you have to compute basically a four-point function, source for the neutron, sink for the neutron, electromagnetic current, and your chromo EDM insertion. And this is a kind of a cartoon of all the topologies that you have. So the red is the chromo EDM insertion, the blue is the current electromagnetic, the photon insertion. You see you have this host of diagrams, for which Sergei shows that there's already some signal in their approach. We were kind of scared by all this four-point function. We tried an alternative method, which is to modify the insert the chromo EDM in the Dirac operator. It's quark bilinear. This requires some tricks. There's a reweighting factor. We're not ready. This has been presented at LARIS 2016 preliminary results. The main message is that there is a signal. There's a signal, but again, on just a limited number of ensembles and so on. So we're not there yet. But there's a roadmap here. Finally, before moving on to the phenomenology, I'd like to say a few words about the other matrix elements, so pi and n, which are then particularly important for nuclear EDMs. Here again is what the review by Pospolov and Ritz tells us. Again, look at the prefactor here, 5 plus or minus 10. 20 plus 40 minus 10. So a lot of work is needed there, but fortunately, again, there's a strategy, a plan to get there through lattice QCD calculation led by Andred Walker-Loud. And finally, just to scare you a little bit, again, if you're a phenomenologist and you want to know, as I'll show you later, what's the impact of a CP violating coupling of the Higgs to the top quark on the, let's say, the mercury EDM, you have to go through something like this, right? So you get the formula in terms of the short distance coupling, the G0, then you go to the G0 as a function of these. Okay, and look at all the barriers you encounter and how big the errors are. So basically, I'll show you that a lot of work is needed here, but this is, I hope, is going to be a strong motivation to improve this. All right, so this kind of ends the first part of my talk. Now I'll move on to a little bit more phenomenology. So as I said in my introduction, we have the Higgs. It's a major discovery. So far, the Higgs properties are compatible with the standard model expectation. And this is somehow throwing away a lot of other dimensions. It's kind of a one-dimensional representation of the agreement of the Higgs with the standard model, couples to heaviest standard model particles linearly, as expected in the standard model. Top Z, W, B, tau. For muon, it's still an upper bound. For lighter flavor, we really don't know whether it couples as expected to the standard model, like proportional to the mass, M over V. There's still some room for deviation. This is a key question at the LHC round 2. And I think it ought to be an important goal also for low energy experiments with atoms and nuclei. And there are also very interesting ideas which they're not related to the EDM, to really detect the Yukawa force through atomic interferometry. But this is something way beyond the scope of this talk. But just tell you that atoms and nuclei can play a role here. But what I'll focus on, I'll try to convince you that EDMs play an important role in pinning down the CP-odd couplings of the Higgs. And how do we do this? So I like to be as general as possible. And so we work in this framework of the so-called standard model effective field theory. So you basically assume that the new physics is heavy compared to the electroweak scale, and you parameterize its effects to a string of higher dimensional operators suppressed by inverse powers of this heavy scale. Dimension 5 operator does not break CP, so I'm not going to discuss that. CP violation in the Higgs sector appears at dimension 6 through three classes of operators, operators that have essentially two Higgs fields and two field strengths, HH, VV dual. modification to the Yukawa, which to write them in a gauge invariant form at dimension 6, you need to spit out 3 Higgs fields. It's basically the standard model Yukawa multiplied by H dagger H. And then there are dipoles, left-right operators with sigma mu nu strengths of the gauge boson. And then again, for gauge invariants, you need to add include an Higgs there. So I'll go through, other authors, many people have looked at these. So I'll go systematically through these and describe other people working in my own work. So let me start from Higgs coupling to 2 photons. This came, received a lot of attention right after the discovery of the Higgs, where at that time there was an excess in Higgs to gamma-gamma branching ratio, and people were trying to describe it through non-standard coupling of this form. And of course, in order to guarantee that this is a positive shift, so it goes up, there was a lot of attention on the CP odd non-interfering amplitude, this one. But then it was immediately realized that an object like this will also generate through a loop diagrams like this will generate an EDM for fermions, electron and quarks. And using the bound on the electron EDM, it was immediately shown that this lambda associated with this was about, back then, before the new ACMA limit, it was about 50 TeV. But then with the new ACTEM, it's really 100 TeV. And it will allow you a very meager excess in Higgs to gamma gamma of 10 to minus 5 in the branching ratio. So this bound, of course, is derived kind of naively in the effective theory approach, but can be evaded only through elaborate model building. So for example, you have to assume that there's some other new physics that give you directly an EDM at the I scale, and then that all the electron, and then the two things, when you run it down, cancel each other, the two effects, all right? It's possible, but requires new particles, new more elaborate model building. Or you can have, this author showed that the effect on the EDM could be canceled by a nearly degenerate new scalar particle there. And they even looked there's evidence for this particle in the spectrum, gamma-gamma spectrum. There was none, so again, it's kind of, this is just an illustration of how these constraints can really teach us something about the Higgs physics, the Higgs sector. Then with Yang-Ting Chen, Walter Deakins, Jordi De Vries, and Emanuele Merighetti, we decided to look systematically at all these operators, including the one that coupled the Higgs to quarks and gluons. These were not looked at the beginning by other people because, you see, there are uncertainties. It's not so easy to relate EDMs to these hadronic couplings of Higgs. And so the obvious first operator to look at is the same as the photon. You replace the photon with the gluon strength, GG dual. This operator will do several things for you at the high scale. You can probe it. It will affect gluon fusion, the production for cross-section. It will affect the Higgs width as well. So we worked out the so-called signal strength, so the ratio of the modified over the standard model cross-section. But also, they will affect EDMs and through quantum mechanical mixing, right? Quantum theory mixing. And so this is a representative diagram that shows you the mixing of this guy onto the quark chromo EDM at some high scale. But then, again, we take the quantum field theory, effective quantum field theory seriously, so there's mixing of this guy with the Weinberg operator, with the quark EDM. So at the low scale, let's say lambda of 1 GeV, you see that all the three main hadronic operators are populated, and they are proportional to the effective coupling at the high scale. So what are the bounds? What you can now try to contrast what you get from the, let's say, Newton EDM to the others. And here they're summarized in this table. And let's look for a moment at the first line. Here in the first line, we are ignoring the uncertainty on the matrix elements, on the hadronic matrix elements. So you see the neutron and mercury actually tells you that this coupling in some dimensionless units can't be larger than 4%, while the LHC would tell you, oh, it could be as large as 30%, basically. However, if you do a more serious job with the uncertainties in the matrix elements, you find, not so surprisingly, that the neutron Eddington bounds become much weaker. And the mercury, unfortunately, disappears because many of these ranges included zero. So it's very hard to make sense of, extract a bound that has some statistical meaning. So that's a lesson, right? So the central EDMs leave little room. But however, once you do a better job, you lose constraining power, unfortunately. What about other couplings? We looked at systematically at the Yukawa couplings, modified Yukawa couplings, to all quark flavors. So here's a dimensionless way of writing v squared times imaginary part of uy prime. Q is a dimensionless number. And this new higher dimensional operator induced pseudoscalar coupling of the Higgs. And again, you can play the same game. You look at what would be their effect at colliders. Well, they will affect the Higgs production and Higgs decay, the Higgs widths. And then you ask, what is their effect at low energy? And there's a bunch of two-loop, so-called Bar-Z diagrams that will give you an EDM. For example, let's look at this one. This could be, let's say, a top quark running to this is a Higgs and this is a photon. It's generating a EDM for any fermion. This could be electron quarks and so on. And you're sensitive to non-standard coupling here to the top or to the light fermion. So you can, that way you can put bounds on these guys. And so that's the idea behind this kind of bounds. And once you take into account all the uncertainties, here's what you get. I plot them into this table. Again, these are dimensionless number. The depth of the bar is the strength of the coupling. The blue is from EDMs. The red is from what you get from LHC. And if you convert this dimensionless number into a scale by multiplying by v squared, this is the kind of range of lambda in TeV. Yet another way of looking at it is to look at it as rescaling to the standard model value of the Yukawa coupling. You can think of this kappa tilde as an imaginary part. The real part is fixed to 1 because it's proportional to m over q. So for the up quark, this is EDM still tells you that you could have the Yukawa could be 1 plus or minus i 0.4. So it's the one where we are entering really a precision era is the top. The top imaginary part is 1%. But for the others, there's still considerable room. How will this bound improve in the future? Well, the EDM bounds scale linearly because the LHC, they do not scale linearly. You have to look at how your background is changing, how the standard model cross-section is changing. We did some projection, you expect a factor of 2. And again, I want to drive home again the point that the matrix element dilute. The uncertainty, if I make up improved ranges for the uncertainty, here's what you will get. You get much better, much stronger bounds. And the stronger bounds, again, we're not there yet, but they're obtained by assuming that the uncertainties are at the level of 25 to 50%. In other words, we know at least the sign of these matrix elements, which we're not there yet in some cases. Okay. Yes, so before going to the high-scale supersymmetry, one more example of Higgs non-standard Higgs couplings. The couplings of the Higgs to the top, through the dipole, the electroweak dipole, where this could be a W or a photon. Somehow the effect, this was overlooked in the list. This coupling is searched all the time at collider, all right, search for at collider. However, EDMs through these two-loop diagrams. It's basically a leading log analysis. You can look at it, look at the divergent part of this, you stick it here and look at the divergent part, you get a double log. It's a very powerful constraint on the so here's your top photon Higgs. Then this diagram, plug it in here. It's a two-loop diagram in reality. And here's the graphically, you have a real part and an imaginary part. You have a magnetic dipole of the top and an electric dipole of the top. And you can contrast the impact of EDM versus other observables, such as flavor decays, B2S gamma, or Higgs to gamma gamma. Of course, Higgs to gamma gamma is sensitive to the real part. And you see, this is not a joke. The EDM constraint is a line on this scale. So you have to blow it up. So it's a factor of 10 to the 3 improvement over the flavor constraint, the B2S gamma constraint. So I thought this was cute. And of course, if you look at the estimates of the sensitivity directly at the LHC, again, this is a factor of 1,000 stronger than you can see at the LHC. So discussion, I will skip this. Maybe Susan will ask this question later about cancellation. And let me, in the remaining 5 minutes, let me tell you a little bit about probing high-scale supersymmetry. So it's a fact, the absence of direct signals and the observation of the Higgs at this mass scale, 125, put strong constraint on the spectrum of supersymmetric particles. Theorists have been preparing for this, I would say. Already about 10 years ago, Arcania Med, Dimopoulos, Judith, and Romanino came up with this so-called split supersymmetry scenario, where, yes, the spectrum, look at this cartoon. This is a representation of the spectrum. You have Gaginos and Higgsino at about 1 TeV. Everything else could be 10 to the 3 TeV or higher. The scalar partners are very heavy. This split SUSY retains some attractive features of supersymmetry, so like a gauge coupling unification and a dark matter candidate, right? And the point that has been known for a while is that EDMs are among a handful of observable capable of probing such a high scale, all right? And so let me illustrate this. There are essentially, once you assume this spectrum, it's been shown that essentially two types of operators that are generated. At one loop in the quark sector, you generate EDMs and chromo-EDMs through a diagram like this. There's a gluino, and these are a quark line, a scalar partner of the quarks. What's interesting here is that even though the mass scale downstairs is set by these PEV quarks, upstairs you can gain a factor of m top because you can go through the third generation and you get an m top up here, right? That saves the day for this kind of diagrams. And a competing diagram is this two loop bar Z, where here is a Chargino. Again, this is a TeV scale particle. This is all light, 125. And so you can get, you pay a price of an extra loop, but you still get something that is within reach of the next generation experiments. And the relative importance of these two is controlled by the Higgsino mass parameter. Here it appears upstairs, here it appears downstairs. And these authors, Altman, Sofer, Harnik, and Zupan, have beautifully shown plotting everything as a function of mu, fixing everything else. What are the impressive things here? Well, impressive thing, look at the mass scale. There are mass scale here of 10 to the 3 TeV, 1,000 TeV. And here we're talking quark fixed at 500 TeV. And current EDM for the neutron is here, but the next generation will be able to really probe this scale. Again, assuming this plot assumes maximal CP violation, right? There are assumptions that go into this plot. From my point of view, an even more interesting point is that if the mu is the Higgsino mass parameter is below 10 TeV, this diagram you can basically forget about. So there's only the bar Z diagram, and there's only one phase that controls both the neutron EDM and the quark EDM, right? And so we looked a little bit into this kind of regime, and now slicing the parameter space in a slightly different way. So you can, what we did, we plotted the isolevel curves, level of constant EDM in the plane mu versus M2. Now we're letting M2 vary below 10 TeV. And you see, for fixed tangent beta, which is basically an overall rescaling factor, and maximal CP phase. These are easy to rescale, right? So now here are isolevel curves of the electron EDM, and here is the ACME limit. So again, the scale, this is 5 TeV, right? What's more interesting, if I take the ratio, so this is excluded, right? Light, with the mass, this pushes the mass, for fixed phase, you push the mass heavier, to heavier regions. But now you can ask, so if I take the ratio, the phase will disappear, And so we studied this, and we showed with our improved matrix element on the tensor charge, you can get a stringent upper bound on the neutron EVM. It can't be greater than, so it has to be smaller than 4 × 10⁻⁸ centimeter. Otherwise, you start cutting into the excluded case. All right? And we did it, of course, by varying over all phase, over all the parameters, the relevant parameter space. So this is an example. So, well, the consequences of this can be falsified by the, for example, the SNS EVM search or the Munich EVM search. And it's just, I think, a nice illustration of how you're improving the matrix element gives you enhanced model discriminating power. All right, so I think this was so interesting that he forgot to flush me. No.
Are we nice.
Thank you. So maybe 1 minute, if you give me 1 minute, since this question gets asked a lot, no time left. Ask me if you want to know a little bit about biogenesis. No. I have one slide, and then this brings me to the conclusion. So EVMs are a powerful probe of new sources of CP violation. I tried to give you an illustration, phenomenologically motivated by what the LHC has seen, that this can help us with the Higgs, and there's a great sensitivity to high-scale scenarios. So the interpretation of the null, for now, or positive EVM searches requires bridging scales from BSM to hadronic, nuclear, and atomic, and controlling the uncertainties will be essential to fully exploit the heroic experimental efforts. And I gave you concrete examples of that. And here I keep saying this, but Lattice QCD is already having, I would say, big impact on this. And outlook, so I think EVMs will stay. So if we have such a conference 10 years from now, EVMs will play a role. They may lead to a discovery of new physics before colliders. They will have a major impact on elucidation. Whatever it's discovered at the LHC or future colliders, EVMs will teach us something about the CP properties of these particles. If new physics exists only at very high scale, EVMs may be among the few observables that can probe it. This somehow justifies the large number of talks, both in theory and experiments, that we've had at this conference. And thank you for your attention.
So, questions?
Could you decipher the slide before the last?
Before the last. This one, yeah, this one. Okay, so great. So impact on biogenesis. So first of all, I would say EVMs can probe really, so there are many, many biogenesis scenarios. Right? It can happen at many scales. EVMs have a lot to say on the so-called weak scale biogenesis, when baryon asymmetry is generated at the electroweak phase transition, temperature about 100 GeV, where there are bubbles of electroweak phase that expand. Okay, so even there, so again, I'm giving you the caveat. Even there, there's no one-to-one correspondence. There are models where the phase that generate biogenesis does not appear in the EDMs. Somehow, theorists, model builders are now building in the EDM because they try to avoid, from the start, the EDM constraint. Okay, so given this caveat, however, it's true there are interesting models where there is a correlation between the phase that controls biogenesis and the phase that appears in EDM. And here is one example, NMSSM. When this author wrote this paper, it was the MSSM. Now, MSSM, minimal supersymmetric standard model, cannot make it, but not because of the EDM, because of the phase transition. Given the parameters, there doesn't seem to be a first-order phase transition in the MSSM. You need some extra singlet. That's the meaning of N, next minimal supersymmetric standard model. In this model, successful biogenesis, which is in this plane of phase versus mass, gives you a region of parameter where you get the right baryon asymmetry, all right? And then EDMs can tell you, right? On this plane, you can project the lines of constant EDM. This is a neutron EDM for 10⁻²⁷ centimeter. This is 3 × 10⁻²⁸, This is 10 to the minus 28 e centimeter. So you would conclude from this slide that, I mean, first of all, it's within reach of the next generation. And then you would say, haha, if the next generation does not see an EDM, you basically kill this scenario of baryogenesis, because this is a multidimensional parameter space, but you're projecting somehow over it. And, however, I warn you, already this was done before our calculation of the tensor charges. Already with the new tensor charges, you know everything shifts about. So the EDM is smaller. What you see here, it's about 10 to the minus 3. It's a factor of 3 smaller, so it's close to 10 to the minus 29. Okay, so these are bands. So this, again, points to the... In this scenario, it's a bar Z diagram. It's still this scenario, yes, you already know that the supersymmetric scalar are heavier. In this paper, this was the assumption. The phase is the same phase that appears in the bar Z diagram. So the dominant contribution to the quark, to the neutron EDM, are from the quark EDM.
Not for quark color.
Not for
quark color EDMs.
Sorry, not for?
Not the quark chromo EDMs.
No, not in this particular model, no. Yeah.
And one should, of course, also remember that all this assumes that the theta term doesn't play.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. So I wanted to revisit the discussion of McKean et al. In regards to the connection of the electron EDM to Higgs to gamma, CP violation and Higgs to gamma-gamma. In precise, we know that the molecular systems don't purely give a limit on DE. There's in principle a four-quark operator as well that parametrically, although suppressed, appears. And one could ask, how fine-tuned would it have to be to rearrange a cancellation so that the severe electron EDM limits are, in fact, not as powerful as suggested here?
Yes. I don't think they look at it in that from that point of view. They're not looking at cancellation. You're right. In principle,
I want to say there's just a different axis with respect to discussion here.
Yes. They didn't look at it, and I didn't look at it. It's hard to work out the numbers in the head. Yes, they looked at different type of cancellation. For example, with a new degree of freedom. Light. Yes,
no, but sure. But that's why I asked the question.
Yes, yes. No, in principle, it's a logically different. Yes.
I was just wondering, in your split SUSY model, how many independent phases are there?
So in the.
In the minimal.
In the genetic scenario with the squirt, so. This diagram has a lot of phases because they come from the stop sector, right. Mixing sector. This one is very limited. It's just the phase in the Chargino mass mix. It's a relative phase of mu with M2, basically, the Chargino. So when I go to this limit here, where this one is dominant, there's only basically one phase that
So that's the dominant diagram.
That's in the low mu, when mu is below 10 TeV, this is the dominant diagram.
I see.
So in that region, there's only one phase. That's why you can make this correlation very strong. Yeah.
I'll just shout it out here. In your Yukawa coupling to quark, for the top and the bottom, the limits from the EDM came from the electron EDM.
Yes.
How does that interaction with diagram or coupling do that?
It came. I went very fast, but. It's this, that is the bar Z diagram with the, it's basically this diagram. You have a photon, this is a top loop, you put the non-standard coupling here, and here is just an electron with its regular Yukawa coupling. To get those bounds, we put, the electron Yukawa to its standard model value, which technically we don't know whether it's really at that one, but we fix it.
Further questions?
You may mentioned the tensor charge,
yes.
And you did the continuum,
yes.
Volume, and excited states,
yes.
Estimates. And you said it's about 10%.
Yes.
Can you quantify further? I mean,
for
what
the
percentage is volume? What percentage is cutoff?
Let's see. Can I quantify? Because okay, this comes. So the excited state contamination and the statistical error, they're intimately related because they come from a fit of the correlation function. So it's hard to disentangle the two. And then on top of that, we do a fit. Once you, for a given ensemble, you obtain a number from the correlation, then you do a overall fit to global fit in A, volume, and N pi. And that gives you an additional error, and so the error of this fit, so let me show you, of the second fit, so.
Well, I want to say cutoff effects are important, for
well,
example.
Well, cutoff effect, okay, you can read it from here, no, not, well. You can read it off here. So each of these numbers, so the error on each of these comes from this fit to the correlation, just the quantum mechanical thing. So it carries some uncertainty, both statistical and systematic, from the form of your fit, how many, you know, one excited versus two, the two-state fit, and so on. Then on top of that, you do the fit to this form, and we tried also other functional form with the chiral logs, which are known by work by Jordi. You try those, you always end up well within this range here. Okay, so, and if you just stare at the data, you see that A dependence is not a dramatic effect, but it does give a tilt from here to here. There's a slope. And this is order A because while the action is improved, the operators are not improved. So there's an order A.
Further questions?
A dumb question from a non-lattice guy. I mean, I see the in the lower plot on the left corner,
yes.
I see the blue points,
yes.
The lowest ones,
yes.
Or lowest A.
It's
I wonder, I mean, both of them are out of your band. I mean,
yes, you are perfectly right. In fact, it's surprising no one asked this question, even with Wei Wen. So these are not, so but you it's hard to, it's kind of a not optimal way to represent the fit. You should think of it as a fit in three dimension. If you were able to plot things in three dimension, the line would go really close. The function, it's a function of three parameters, A and pi, would go very close. Now it's projected on the two-dimensional plane, keeping the other two at the best fit value, at the physical point. So, right, so it's not supposed to go through. It's, apologies, but that's the way. If you were able to plot it in 4D, yeah, you would be able to see. Okay.
So before I hand the floor over to Andreas, I'd like to say a couple of words. So I think we all agree that this was a wonderful meeting in a great location. It was run very smoothly, and most importantly, it was an outstanding scientific program, and for that we should thank the organizers, Mai Bei, Susan, Susanna, and Andreas. So please join me putting your hands together and thanking the organizers. And with that.
Just a moment. Just a moment.
So as a small group in the library, we have this Some of you will stay on, so we will see each other next week. For the others, I wish a safe return, safe flight home, and maybe we see each other, as mentioned, in 10 years or another conference on the end, so maybe new results, you know, went better. Who knows? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.